Well, at its annual convention, the new NRA head, Hedley Lamarr, brings the crowd to its feet by declaring war on the unarmed.
Men, you are about to embark on a great crusade to stamp out runaway decency in the West. Now you will only be risking your lives, whilst I will be risking an almost certain Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor. Now raise your right hand for the pledge. Right! Now repeat after me. I. Your name?
Your name.
Pledge allegiance. To Hedley Lamarr.
To Hedley Lamarr.
That's Hedley!
Hedley!
And to the evil.
And to the evil.
For which he stands.
For which he stands.
Now go to that voodoo that you do so well.
Well, what do you know?
Welcome to an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, Beautiful Ruins author Jess Walter takes the stage, and we take a swing at the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who has enough miles for a one-way to Mars, it's Michael Feldman.
That's okay. And in all the news that isn't, Pope Emeritus Benedict returns to the Vatican's mother-in-law cottage. Nice little place they got behind the Vatican. One more pontiff, and it's the papal hat trick. Okay. There's a rival group to Planned Parenthood formed. It's called Crapshoot Parenthood. How about that, then? President Obama proposes a path to citizenship that's not across the river on someone's back. Or a mad dash across 805 at San Diego. Our Republicans try to keep a balance between keeping everybody out and getting the votes of those who slip by. Okay. Jamestown Remain suggests John Smith ate Pocahontas. It was the hunger winner, I think they called it. The starving hunger winner. So, after one goes off at the NRA convention, the hall erupts in mousetraps and ping pong balls. Well, I could explain that, but why bother? You know. After the Jason Collins announcement, America waits for the first openly gay CPA. It's a breakthrough for basketball, though. It means at least two guys on the bench and an assistant coach are gay. So that's a breakthrough. Okay, maybe not for you, but I think it's for me it's a breakthrough. The son can't hold a job, so Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands abdicates. Gives him one. Only way he's going to get one. Have you seen the guy?
Yeah.
But you know, if monarchy means Queen Maxima, let's do it. Queen Maxima. Now possible using a 3D printer to print a gun and all the organs it pierces. So that's pretty convenient. Pretty convenient. Contingent on getting out of this whole thing, Jody Arias, a shoe-in for Bachelorette. Possibly dancing with the defendants. That's another one. Mark Sanford takes another break from the campaign trail for the Appalachian Trail. And who knew it went all the way to Argentina? That's pretty amazing. That's a long trail, actually, if you think about it. Anthony Weiner shows slight poll rise. Very slight. Apple bonds are offered 1-to-1 for Packer stock. There's some concern that high alert, what a buzz, hubba hubba, whoa, gum, has caffeine in it. But it is a convenient way of taking your coffee. You know. I prefer climb the wallpaper with your nails gum. It's very, very good stuff. Golfer Vijay Singh says his deer antlers get all dried out without the spray. Deer antler spray. How many of you here use deer antler spray for some purpose? Possibly legitimate. Anyone here? Jeff, what do you use it for?
My wrists hurt. I have some. I've sprayed it.
You do? Actually, deer antler spray? Do you have it on you? Can I see what...
It's in my car.
Can you run out and get it? You're not doing anything. You're just standing there holding a base.
I will.
Okay. So you do. And does it help the wrist thing?
I think so, yeah.
Well, really cool. Singh did say that he's cut back on the rhino horn, so still does deer antlers, I guess, a little bit. President and Mrs. Obama say no to tattoos, but will look the other way on Plan B. Of course, if your druggist is opposed, you know, it's on to Plan C. That's the thing with Plan B. New York Yankees seek Medicare expansion. The word out of Chicago is that next season it's the Rosemont Cubs. Hoffman Estates Cubs, that sounds good too. A survey finds 2 out of 3 Supreme Court justices can't name a single American. The White House furloughs hit calligraphers hard. They wiped out the whole calligraphy crew at the White House. Darn furloughs. It turns out a lot of guys have terrorista number one plates, surprisingly. Not as many, though, as dumbass number one. And that's all the news. That is, and thank you so much, and good night. I mean that. I gotta go. Okay. Well, thank you for that flight. Applause. I like flight of applause better than that. Art and Rosie are here, my brother Art. And Rosie. How are you? Nice to see you. Yeah. Oh, guys, Robin and Henry are there. That's my wife there. So now you know the whole row there. Thanks for filling in. We have some seats empty there. Nice to have you here. Well, this is great. I'm very pleased, thrilled, actually. Jess Walter is with us. His latest collection is short stories, We Live in Water, and that's right here. He's probably best known recently for a smash hit called Beautiful Ruins. He's with us right here in person, live and incarnate. Jess Walter, ladies and gentlemen, ascending the stage right now. Your response was even politer than mine, I think.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, thank you.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Is this part of the book tour? No, that's over with, isn't it?
Well, I'm in they broke my book tour into, it's like a trilogy, so I'm in the third part, which is the Midwest. So I started on the East Coast, which was great. Yeah. I got to bring my kids, took my daughter. I read at Harvard and Yale and told my daughter it was the schools you probably can't get into, I can't afford tour. So.
Well, there's probably something nearby, Spokane, right, that they can get
into it. Right. She wants to get as far away as possible. She loved Berkeley, but she was afraid we could get there in one plane ride. So she wants to go to Stuttgart University or something.
What is she thinking of going into?
Belize State. She doesn't know. She's only 15. I mean, she's. I just wanted her to see. I was telling my nephew when I chose colleges, it was, you know, my dad said, you can go to this one or this one, but you have to pick the cheaper one. So I'd like her to have a little more choice, but still pick the cheaper one, please.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, is she a writer as well, or is she thinking?
I don't know what she, I mean, right now she's a 15-year-old, so she's a texter. She reads a lot. She's a really, really bright kid, you know, and everyone thinks their kids are geniuses, but my kids really are geniuses.
You're not on the internet yourself, are you? A social? Because that would sort of kill a lot of the writing.
You know, I do a little bit. They want you more and more to, but it does feel like, you know, the publishers, world, the future. But it does feel like you're giving away little bits of the good stuff for free. I sometimes want to take tweets back and say, you know, wait, I could use that in a book.
So, yeah, and then if you tweet them, you feel like it's gone.
Feel like it's gone. I mean, that seems like plagiarizing from myself.
Yeah. Because otherwise, what do you do? Would you write things, you think of something, like a line or something, even, or a notion, and you keep a journal?
When I first got Twitter, I sort of thought, oh, that's clever and funny. And then I thought, wait a minute, I'm supposed to keep this clever and funny stuff for the books. So, but I still, I see people who do it, and I kind of admire the way they do it. For me, to write, you have to really immerse yourself, and you have to break away from, you know, it's almost like describing the current of of society by stepping out of it.
Yeah.
And to be in the midst of it like that makes it harder for me to write. So I try. I don't have the internet in my office.
Yeah.
I don't bring my phone out there. It's kind of an immersion tank. And then I sleep until everyone's gone. Then I go in the house and watch TV. No, I don't really.
It would actually be helpful to be an alien and write about America, wouldn't it?
I do think every writer's a bit of an expat. You know, yeah. You have to live outside the world that you're describing, even if you're still there. And so to be constantly in this flow of information, I appreciate it, you know, as a citizen, that if I become curious about the temperature in Denmark, I can look it up at any moment. But when you're trying to really live in a fictional world, you're writing about it becomes the worst thing.
Yeah, and I read about your work habits. What, do you get up at 5? That's my wife's phone, by the way. Yeah.
I'm not here if that's for me.
You know, yeah.
Yeah, I come from a family of cattle ranchers, and I think some bit of spare of rogue DNA kicks in, and I wake up thinking it's time to plow the fields. But
at 5, wake up at 5.
Yeah, wake up usually at 5. I haven't set an alarm in years. I spend the night. I have a journal by my bed. I write a little bit in my journal. When I wake up, I'm kind of ready to go to work. I also developed this trick where my wife makes these incredible chocolate chip oatmeal bars, and I make a big latte, and I don't start working until I can't eat the cookie until my fingers are on the home keys. So it's sort of Pavlovian. I wake up thinking cookie.
Now home keys, still using a typewriter. You could be the last writer. To use
no, I mean in the of a keyboard. I was trained as a journalist, so the device matters less to me. I do write in a journal, but when I head to work in the morning, it's on a keyboard.
Yeah. And you have, and as I understand it, you have like, at any given time, 3 novels and 4 collections of short stories and 7 essays going simultaneously. Is that fairly accurate?
Yeah, that was my cure for writer's block when I when I realized I was going to try to do this full time back in the mid 90s. I was terrified that at any minute they were going to come in and drag me back and make me go to an office. So, and my wife would go to work and I would get stuck on the thing I was writing, and the show that was always on was Rockford Files. For some reason it was on at 9 in the morning, and I would just get this urge to not write and go watch Rockford Files. And I started thinking about that term writer's block and how it blames the writer, and I thought, it's not my fault, you know, it's the thing I'm writing that I'm stuck on. So I just started switching. I would jump from one thing to another, and it's the reason a novel like Beautiful Ruins took 15 years to write, was I was constantly jumping into something else. I'll have any of 5-6 things going at once.
And this was kind of a, I don't know if it's a breakthrough for you, but it was such a smash hit, Beautiful Ruins.
Yeah, that's been, after 8 books, it's been a great, pleasant surprise to have so many readers respond to it. When we were in New York, my son and I went to get theater tickets, and, you know, he sees me as dad, and but I gave the ticket taker my credit card, and he looked and said, "The Jess Walter?" And I said, "A Jess Walter." And he said, "The writer?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "I just read Beautiful Ruins." I said, "Oh, thanks." And a woman behind us in line said, "Jess Walter?" And my son's just looking at me with these huge eyes, you know, like, what is this universe we're in? And then, and she says, "Can I take your picture?" And I said, "Sure." And then the woman behind her said, "Will you take a picture with my daughter?" And my son now just thinks we've landed on some alien planet. Yeah. And as she's taking a picture, the woman says, "Who are we taking a picture of?" So... yeah, they had, you know, a couple of people knew. The rest of them just saw, you know, take a picture.
Has it made you closer? Has it driven you apart? Because suddenly you're a celebrity, kind of hard to deal with.
They had to do papers on famous Washington residents at my kid's school, and one of his friends picked me, and he rolled his eyes. So he thought that was kind of lame. So,
yeah, because he can't do it, really. It's not fair if he would do it.
That would be a really bad paper. The man won't even give me a cell phone. Yeah. You know,
so did you ever hear from the Richard Burton estate or any, you know, in using him as an actual character?
No, you know, I think that's more common than people think. It does sort of stun people to see that, you know. But I don't know if the Abraham Lincoln vampire hunter people have heard from from his estate either, you know. And it's
probably from Mary Todd's.
Yeah, maybe people, yeah. Right. You know, as a career journalist, I sort of embed everything I do in research. But when you read a novel, you assume these are fictional versions of. Of the characters you encounter. So yeah. I feel like my Burton, and it was fascinating to read Burton's diaries and to see, they're amazing, and to see the real Richard Burton come out. And I felt like the way I portrayed him in the novel would have slid in there just right. And And it was fascinating to me to see there's a great 4-year gap in his diaries right at the time my novel occurs. So maybe maybe it's truer than I imagined.
So you filled that in for him.
Yeah, right.
And that was during that Cleopatra.
Yeah, for some reason he did not keep a diary. He quit in 60 and he started up again in 64. Yeah. There's a great piece by John le Carré in The New Yorker about working with Burton and, you know, and these great drunken stories and Elizabeth Taylor pulling up in a white Rolls Royce and Burton yelling at the driver, and it's great. But again, it felt like, you know, you read something like that and you think, even though my Burton is fictional, you think, I got this guy right.
Yeah. Did it start with Burton, the idea for this?
No, you know, it really began. I went to Italy with my wife in 1997, and I was just taken by the place and the culture, and my mom had gotten sick and would die of cancer. So I began with a sick woman with cancer arriving in a small village, and that's all I had for the longest time. It sort of tracked the entire career of my novel writing. So every time I would get stuck on a chapter, I would introduce a character who was stuck on a chapter. Yeah. I would, get sort of engaged in the question of art that is beautiful versus art that is a kind of pose, and that would work its way in.
Yeah, so that's where Hollywood comes in.
Yeah, right, exactly. I worked in Hollywood over that time, adapting my books, trying to get them made into films and working on a couple of others. And so all of that cynicism and hopefulness made it in. So, yeah, it's a kind of travelogue in a way of where I went in the 15 years I wrote it.
You're sort of like the author who goes there every year to rewrite his one chapter.
You know, that when I wrote that, I was stuck on one chapter. And I had two problems. I also had named the hotel in my Italian village the Hotel Adequate View. Yeah. Which is the
outstanding? What an outstanding!
I loved it. I thought they should give the Nobel Prize just for that.
I think so. That's a good one.
But it was the least Italian thing you would ever name anything. No Italian man would ever say his view was only adequate, you know, or that his trousers were too loose. You know, it was understatement not being a key part of the Italian psyche. I realized I needed an American to come in and name it. And so I was stuck on one chapter, so I threw into the novel an American writer stuck on one chapter.
Yeah. Did the hotel name come from the writer? What was his name?
Yeah, his name's Alvis Bender.
Alvis. And right. Wasn't he from Madison or something?
Yeah, he was. Yeah,
from Zimmerick Buick or one of the Buick dealerships.
Yes, right. Yeah, I was trying to figure out a place that he was from, and a friend of mine had just moved from Madison, and I was so interested. I hadn't actually been here even when I chose it. I ended up coming for a nephew's wedding, my nephew's wedding, which was great. It was in a dairy barn, which seemed really fitting. And I said, "It's great that you do this for weddings," and they said, "What are you talking about?" No, it was really it's a lovely place. I chose the
did
right
they have
locale.
The stanchions and everything.
Yeah,
no,
yeah,
really,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I actually did some work. Got some. No, I didn't.
It's metaphorical in some sense.
Yes.
For the whole marriage thing.
Yeah.
But so the idea for the book, is the book in your thinking of it about the actress, or is it about Pasquale,
I tend to think of my books more in thematic terms,
thematic,
probably.
Yeah.
And so for me, the book was always about the way we have a dream that our lives will do a certain thing, and that we end up living instead of that dream a version of our lives, and the beauty that has, but the regret also. There's a moment in the book where Pasquale realizes his life will always be the one he leads and the one he dreamed about. And and so I wanted to write about that in a kind of wistful, hopefully lovely way. And then the characters to me, which is what most people think the book is about, the plot and the characters. Those are people you end up living with and sort of trying to make the right decisions by. But yeah, it's about an actress who arrives in Italy in 1962, a young innkeeper that he meets, and this moment between them that causes him to come try to find her almost 50 years later.
Right.
It's also about cannibalism.
So, cannibalism.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah,
slightly. But
yeah,
is it the pitch for
right,
the Donner
right.
Party movie?
Yeah,
is also like another classic.
Yes, right.
Yeah. Would you mind reading a little bit?
Of course.
From it?
Yeah.
I don't mean to impose, and you're probably tired of doing it.
No, I wasn't.
But I totally love the opening of the book where we meet Pasquale.
Yeah.
And on his little nook.
Yeah, I'll just read a couple of.
Oh, that'd be great. Items.
The Dying Actress, April 1962, Porta Vigogna, Italy. The dying actress arrived in his village the only way one could come directly, in a boat that motored into the cove, lurched past the rock jetty and bumped against the end of the pier. She wavered a moment in the boat's stern, then extended a slender hand to grip the mahogany railing. With the other, she pressed a wide-brimmed hat against her head. All around her, shards of sunlight broke on the flickering waves. 20 meters away, Pasquale Tursi watched the arrival of the woman as if in a dream, or rather, he would think later, a dream's opposite, a burst of clarity after a lifetime of sleep. Pasquale straightened and stopped what he was doing, what he was usually doing that spring, trying to construct a beach below his family's empty pensione. Chest deep in the cold Ligurian sea, Pasquale was tossing rocks the size of cats in an attempt to fortify the breakwater, to keep the waves from hauling away his little mound of construction sand.
What a great character he is.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. He's a dreamer, of course. He's trying to build his little beach there, the only beach.
He lives in this small village that he's sort of inherited his father's dream as well as the hotel, which is to turn this really out-of-the-way remote place. It was a former cove used by prostitutes for sailors and fishermen to find women of a certain moral and commercial flexibility. And Pasquale has decided at the dawn of the 1960s, this place is going to be overrun with Americans and Kennedys especially and movie stars. And he wants to build a beach, which the waves keep taking away. And even more ridiculously, he wants to put in a tennis court. Until someone reminds him that the balls will go right off the edge of the cliff.
And straight down. Hard to recover those. And his father was much the same way, actually. He was like, chip off the old block.
Yeah. Pasquale goes off to college and goes off to university, and then when he comes back and his father's passed away, I think he's almost surprised to realize he's inherited his father's ambitions and even his father's outlook, I think.
Yeah, although it takes the village people a little bit of time to start joking with him about what he's
they have a sort of relationship with fishermen. You know, the merchants of Italy can trace themselves to the Medici, and so they feel almost a sort of royalty, and so they have always looked down on the fishermen, who in turn tease him relentlessly about his beach. They'll bring him matchboxes and say they've found lounge chairs for his beach, or laugh at the way the wind blows the net for his tennis court away.
Yeah, and now this is going to be a movie, right? I mean, and are you working on the screenplay?
I am. Yeah, they always announce that it's going to be a movie, and then 3 weeks later, everyone says, "Where's that movie?" So it tends to take a little bit of time. But yeah, all three of my last four novels are in some form of moving toward that. It can take years.
So you've been going decades. For it.
Yeah, I've been writing. My first book was a nonfiction book about Ruby Ridge, which was made into a miniseries. And I love film. I love the idea of it. I really want to make something great. There's an entire system you have to sort of negotiate. With Beautiful Ruins, we've got a great director, Todd Field, who's made a couple of movies that I just think are brilliant. So the only way I know to try to protect the things I love about the novel are to try to work with good people.
Yeah.
And he and I are writing the script together right now.
Who's going to play Burton? That's key, right?
I'm thinking I'll probably play Burton. Yeah. Not because I look like him, but just the sheer magnetism. I think,
that's what it's all about.
Right.
And he, in fact, is the beautiful ruin, right?
Yeah, he's so, one of them. I mean,
one of them.
To me, the title, that was where I got the title. He was described in his 50s as a beautiful ruin. Uh-huh. But to me, it, when I saw that phrase, I'd been calling the novel The Hotel Adequate View for years. And in another moment of loathing my own career. And then as I was researching and I came across that phrase, I realized it spoke to every one of the characters, all of their dreams and their ambitions and the place they end up and the sort of dignity that they find living lives that don't add up to their dreams but maybe are more beautiful than they ever imagined.
Yeah. And yet, this sort of defies your own genre. Not that you have a genre. You're one of those writers that people get angry about because they can't peg.
Yeah, I try really hard to be genre-less.
You are genre-less.
Yeah. I admire those authors who write the same book over and over. No, I don't. I'll take that back. But I mean, I never want to read the same book twice, so I can't imagine why I'd want to write a similar book. There are themes that I think crop up. I think there's a certain humorous wistfulness that comes up in all the books. But to me, the story tells you what it wants to be. I write poetry. I write essays. I write criticism. I write all kinds of things. And when I find myself in a novel, I don't know what the voice is going to be. I don't know what the characters are going to be like. I sort of like to let myself get swept away.
Oh, that's why I thought, you know, we live in water. It should have been we live in Walter.
Yeah, we live in Walter. Yeah.
Because really, that's...
Yeah. Yeah, I'll suggest that to the editors. Let's see if there's time.
I put the L in there.
There it is. Yeah.
We live in Walter.
It looks so much better. Yeah.
And these stories, they're great, but they're sort of more along the lines of your humorous crime approach.
Yeah, so
there's always a good a guy who's on the take or on the make.
Yeah,
and there's something funny about it, except for the cover story itself. We live in water, which is outstanding.
Oh, thank you.
Story and defies your own.
Yeah,
defiance.
Yeah, I am defying my own defiance. Yeah, I think that's probably the best description of me as a writer. The story is when I went to pull together a collection. I wanted to write about the tough economic times we'd gone through, and I wanted it to be, you know, and the town I live in has some great poverty, and I wanted to write about that. Spokane, Washington. Yeah. I wanted to write about that, but not in a way in which I wanted to write about the people we drive past every day. But I chose that title, We Live in Water, because I want you to be able to identify with those characters, to see that we like to think there's a great distance between them and us, and there isn't. It's you know, we're far closer to the edge than we ever want to imagine. Yeah. And so that was what sort of compelled those stories along.
Yeah, and the one that We Live in Water, where a young boy asks his father this question, it seems to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, do we live in water? Right, he's seen
it. Do we live in water? Yeah.
He's seen this aquarium, and the father, for the longest time in the story, has no idea what he's talking about until he finally sees the boy standing in front of the aquarium and these fish that believe they're free but keep swimming into the glass and turning. And at that moment, the father is dealing with his own sort of repetitive behavior and the patterns of his life, and also the question of fate and free will and DNA. You know, do I have to wake up at 5 in the morning every day? Can't I sleep in?
So, and he ends up actually, well, I won't say.
Yeah, don't give away the
spoiler
ending.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, right. Unless we're going to collect $15 from all these people right away.
Oh, yeah, might as well.
Can't be giving the goods away for free.
No. And but I there are quite a few fathers and sons, I've noticed, in this. That seems to run through.
Yeah, I had probably published 40 short stories, and when I went to find the ones that went together, I wanted a sort of theme. I love short story collections, but it seems to me they can be like albums, either greatest hits or concept album. And I felt like I was making a concept album. These are about, you know, men mostly with sort of diminished dreams, and how even in the you know, the pain and the heart of it, they still make decisions that are selfless. They try to be good fathers. And that struck me. New Hampshire, and I was doing a reading, and someone said, "Why are these people all so poor?" And I said, "Well, I'm not, you know, maybe it's easier to be a father with money, you know, where you leave the golf course having just shot a 78 and you go home and you find out that, you know, Skippy Jr. got into Yale. How exciting." I said, that tends not to be the sort of stories that interest either country music singers or short story writers.
No. You know,
we tend to want a little more, you know, grit and drive, and we want the conflict to really to drive the characters. It makes you think about what being a father is, to see a panhandler saving money to buy a gift for his son in foster care. To me, that's just more interesting than
Harry Potter,
than you know, giving your son your old pitching wedge.
Yeah, well, that's another great story. Plus, perhaps the shortest short story ever written, The Can of Corn.
Can of Corn, yeah.
Man, that's an amazing story.
Oh,
it's like a page and a half, maybe.
Yeah, it's a really short one. It's and that was sort of the point of it. I'll often give myself writing exercises, and I wanted to have the full measure of a short story, but pare it down to as few words as possible. And so when you go through and you take out every word that a sentence doesn't need, all the articles, a lot of the attributions, you end up with things like Tommy spun radio stations. And we know exactly what he means. He's in a car and he's spinning, trying to find a radio station. You find great accidents that way. And so the story has a kind of rhythm that I think is, that I ended up liking, almost a musical rhythm,
right,
that appealed to me.
And once again, that was his father that he was picking up from the...
Yeah, his stepfather, Yeah, he's got the assignment. His mother has passed away, and so he has the assignment of picking his stepfather up from jail and taking him for his daily kidney dialysis. And the other thing I wanted to do with that story, there's a sort of Northwest story that is famous that is a kind of fishing story in which, you know, the people aren't described very well, but the way the line dances on the river, you know, it's, and I used to call it fishing porn because of the rich descriptions of the fish and the water and the sunlight. And I love those stories, but I wanted to write the sort of fishing trips I remembered, which was a bunch of guys in an aluminum boat with, and we fished until the beer ran out, you know. And so the only real description in that story is a piece of corn and the hook going through it. That's the only place I slow down and sort of engage in that kind of fishing porn.
Yeah, but it's also about he decides he doesn't.
Yeah, his stepfather decides he, rather than going to kidney dialysis, he wants to fish, and so it's a kind of suicide by fishing story.
Yeah, amazing. It's an amazing.
Yeah, thank
story.
You.
You do some good stuff,
man. Oh, thanks.
Great, I think. And I don't know. There's so much to say about this. Don't eat cat. We can get to that. That's a little bit also a departure. Don't eat cat.
Yeah.
Get on the zombie thing.
Yeah, I wrote that as a sort of protest of zombie stories.
There's okay.
Yeah, there's a riff in the middle about why are we so post-apocalyptic? You know, why are we so sure we're living in the end time? And I think it's a kind of narcissism actually, that when we start to get older, we think, well, the world's got to be dying with us. Yeah. And it's
cell phones. Did you hear that Wilco song? Everybody thinks it's the end of the world.
Yeah, right.
So I'm talking to these kids.
Yeah,
know, everybody thinks it's the end of the world.
Right. And they do. And
every generation.
Right. And this fascination with post-apocalyptic literature especially sort of baffled me. So I wrote what was going to be a zombie protest story. They're not really zombies. You're not supposed to call them zombies. you get in trouble for calling them zombies. And the main character confronts one in a Starbucks in the morning when he's waiting to get his latte and orders a soy latte that they mess up, and someone else orders a double cappuccino, which they hear is double cat-bino. And you can't say cat around zombies because while an attack on a human is incredibly rare, they do go after your house pets. And in fact, to train them for food service, they put them in a room with an actual cat and repeatedly stress, don't eat cat, which is really hard when every fiber of your being is telling you, eat cat. And so even though this zombie has survived this incredible training, he has a bad experience in a Starbucks with a zombie. And of course, it starts the whole ball rolling of the story. And my zombie protest story by the end, I loved it so much that I just wanted to keep writing zombie stories, which proved just how addictive those things are.
Yeah. And then your profile of Spokane.
Yeah. I wrote that sort of separately. It's a piece called Statistical Abstract for My Hometown, Spokane, Washington, which is about all the places that people are from that feel provincial, that feel like they're not the center of the universe, and that sort of self-loathing we have about the place we're from. My original idea was an actual statistical abstract, those documents that census bureaus and other places use to use random stats to tell about a place. And I thought...
Number of Pacific Islanders.
Right, exactly, yeah. And it can be anything, a number of people who own a motorcycle. You know, they venture all over the place. And I had this idea that my statistical abstract, that a short story would slowly leak into it. And so as I was writing it, the number that happens is number 6, which is there are more adult men per capita in Spokane, Washington, riding children's BMX bikes than any other city in the world. And at that point, the story became about bike theft, which I've had more bikes stolen than I think anyone, partly because I buy really cheap bikes and don't lock them up. I'm sort of tempting fate. But one time I had a pretty nice bike, and I was sitting on my stoop, and a guy jumped on it and started riding away. And I chased him down. I grabbed the bike. I said, "What are you doing?" And he said, "I thought it was mine." And I just didn't know what to say. I said, "Well, it's not." And he got off and walked away. And I thought, the audacity. But anyway, so it becomes about sort of bike thievery and why we love and loathe the place we're from. And it felt like the perfect end cap to this collection, because while it's an essay, it kind of works as a story. And I think it sort of hopefully casts back upon all the other stories in the collection.
Oh. Although I the BMX bikes, mm-hmm. I get that. Grown men on them, their knees pumping up.
Right.
But another story, or maybe it's Citizen Vince or something, you're talking about five guys go to
Citizen Vince, yeah.
Yeah, Yeah. They go in five cars to the bar.
Yeah, my novel Citizen Vince is about a Spokane, Washington turned out to be a pretty good place for former New York mafia guys. And so having covered that as a reporter, I wrote a novel about a displaced mafia witness who's sent to Spokane. And that was one of my favorite parts, was having these mafia guys complain about Spokane, you know, how the pizza is like French toast with red sauce. And the worst of all, these four-way stops where people pull up and they're like, you go, no, you go. And it's like, I want to take my gun out and just blow away every one of them, and then I'll go. And of course, the fact that everyone drives everywhere, that five guys will get in five cars, drive five blocks to the next bar.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
Well, it's great having you here. Thanks so much for stopping by and telling us about what you're doing. And We Live in Water is a new collection of short stories. Beautiful Ruins is still selling, now selling in paperback.
Yeah, yeah.
And thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Jess Walter, ladies and gentlemen. Read the books. Buy the books. Have the books. Share the books. Wait for the movie. The movie's coming. Another 3 weeks, they should have it, I'm sure. I want to see who plays Burton. If it's him, that's great. I'm in favor of it.
Yeah, those BMX bikes, weren't they in the Olympics? There's like these big guys on these bikes, and they go over a little jump, and then they
is there? Is that an event now? Like this, must be a trial sport or something.
Very strange.
Yeah, very strange. You had one, though, I bet, when you were a kid, right?
No.
Jeff did. I know Jeff did. BMX. Schwinn with mags. All right. Well, how about a little music here? You feel like playing something?
Yes.
Can you give us a hint what it's going to be so we can...
Starts with the word it.
May as well be spring?
It might as well be spring.
Oh!
Michael Feldman.
Oh, okay there. All right, well, here's the moment you've been waiting for, a chance to play the What Do You Know quiz. Because, I mean, some of you probably came just for that purpose, right? Oh, maybe not. Maybe some of you came without any purpose in mind. That's fine, too. I'm not saying you have to have a purpose in coming here. Before we can play the quiz, however, we have to know who can and cannot participate in it. That's right, it's time for the four disclaimers. Sir, can I get you to come down here? Whatever way works for you, climb over them. That's okay. And this, by law, we're required to read this. It says who can, cannot participate by law. And you are?
Steve Anderson.
Steve Anderson, I'll give this to you, and I'll get out of your way.
The four disclaimers. One, all questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Two, snowmobiling in May up north. Three, persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have recently won should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. Four, all opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Well done. You nailed it. Thank you. Job well done. Let's see the hands of those of you who care to show them at this time to indicate an interest in playing the quiz known as the What Do You Know quiz. What Do You Know quiz. Now this, okay, you look pretty relaxed. I think you can handle this. Yeah, come on down here. Seems important to you, so I'm going to let you have this one. I'm going to stand up here, and you can stand down there. How are you?
I'm good.
And you are?
My name's Matthew Osleason.
Matthew?
Yeah.
Are you from around here, Matthew?
I live just across the square.
You did? So you had to go all the way across the square to get here? And
farmer's market, lots of people, yeah.
Did you go counterclockwise a few times before you got here?
I did do a lap, yeah.
Matthew, one good reason you should play this quiz.
If I had a bucket list, this would be on it.
All right. You don't need a bucket list. You're a young man, but I appreciate that. Care to step up here, Matthew? And join us on the Naugahyde. There you go. All right, here, I got another water here. Just for you, in case you need a libation. That's all we got. That's the chaser, nothing before it. So what are you doing these days, Matthew?
I work for the State Patrol.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for them?
I manage a portfolio of grants to local law enforcement.
Oh.
So I give cops money to pull you over.
You do? Isn't that nice? Because then I give them money when they pull me over, but it doesn't usually yeah. also put the wallet back, is mm-hmm. what they say. You know, are they trained to say that? Is that...
Well, I think they're trained
because you got money in your wallet, and it happens to be there when you hand them the license and the money are in the same thing.
You know, I would have a trouble being a cop. I would. So it's good that I'm not.
Yeah. Did you go through police academy and training and all that stuff? Did you think about being?
I actually did not. So I just went to college and then.
Which college did you go to?
I went to Beloit College.
Beloit is a great yeah. school. Beloit College. Beloit University now, isn't it?
No, it's still college.
Oh, it
it's
is?
It's still college.
It
yep.
So when do they get to be universities? When they reach a certain grant level or
when
something?
When they give out master's or PhDs, I think.
Yeah, what did you study there at Beloit?
I studied sociology.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Any particular group?
I guess shrinking cities.
Shrinking cities? Well, that's
yeah.
interesting.
So then I went to Michigan, where I got my master's in urban planning
yeah.
in studying shrinking cities. But yeah. there's no jobs in shrinking cities because the
That's
cities
why they're
are shrinking.
Yeah, so they're not hiring.
Yeah. So I didn't really think that
it's
through.
It's a conundrum. Conundrum of our
Yeah, I mean, exactly. That's, I mean, you know, you don't, they, I thought, that's really interesting. I didn't think, let's yeah. get a job. So
no jobs in shrinking cities. So kids out there, if you're thinking, if you're in sociology, thinking about shrinking cities, think about something else.
Right.
Expand growing cities, probably.
Yeah, growing cities are great. So go to Western North Dakota.
Yeah.
Those, I mean, their cities are getting really big really fast. So.
Some good advice. That's good. And you got this job, and it's a good job, and you're working, and your things are going great.
I mean, I know I thought it was a great experience getting a job with the state of Wisconsin, even though, you know, everything else
I know
happened.
What you mean. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it is the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean.
I see. On one hand it is, on one hand it is.
You know, yeah.
Well, Matthew, someone out there plays along with you. You know how the quiz works?
I do. Yeah.
General knowledge. You're going to be good at this. I get the feeling. And how does someone play along with Matthew?
People who want to play Sarah? The quiz, pick up their phones and dial 1-800-942-5669, and you ask them a qualifying question of your choosing.
Okay. Here, I choose one. Oh, here's a question. It's from the school category. The question is, what is twerking? Twerking. And it's something you should learn in school now. We didn't learn it in my day, but okay. Shirking we learned in my day, but this is twerking. I don't know what that is. Let's go to the phones right now. Yes, and Eleanor is on the line from Kansas City. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Are you in school now?
No, I'm homeschooled.
You're homeschooled. Okay. Well, do you know what twerking is?
Is it like twisting or something?
Twisting. You mean twisting in a dancing kind of movement?
Yeah.
Yes, of course, we can accept that.
Yeah.
I don't see why not. It isn't. I think it is. I have no idea what it is, really. It's kind of a dance thing that people do, like Miley Cyrus, and that's a lot of twisting involved in that. So I think we can accept that.
Yay!
Congratulations, Eleanor! From Kansas City. Should you be in class right now, Eleanor? Because you are at home, right?
No, I just did it.
You did? What'd you have this morning?
A Spanish test.
Spanish test? How'd you do?
I don't know yet.
You don't know? Does it take a while to get those results back?
It's like a placement test, so I don't really know.
Oh, okay. Do you like Spanish?
Not really.
No? Maybe it's your teacher. Maybe you should get a different... different family or something. Is it your mom or dad or?
My mom teaches me, but this is for an online class.
Oh, this is online. Okay, yeah. What is your mom best at teaching, would you say? What subject is your best subject?
History?
Oh, okay, that's cool. Do you like history?
Yeah.
Cool. Very cool. Eleanor, this is Matthew. He's your partner here. You collaborate with him.
Hello, hi. Eleanor.
Yeah. And he's a very bright guy, and you're very bright, obviously. So the two of you should do really well on this quiz, and we have various categories, which Sarah Nix will now tell us about.
The categories are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, or were you homeschooled, science, and odds and ends.
Okay. Eleanor, let's pick the first category. Which of those would you like?
People.
Okay, these are kind of survey results or what have you. 80%, 90%, or 100% of Americans fail to meet the government's activity standards. Did you know the government had activity standards? They don't have any activity going on. Why should we? I don't.
Yeah.
80%,
90%.
Yeah, Matthew.
You think it's 90%, Eleanor?
I was thinking 80%, but 90% sounds good.
She's thinking 80%, though.
I have more faith in America than 90%.
Yeah, so you're going 80? You're backtracking 80%.
Yes, 80.
80% is it? Yeah, 80% of us. That's not so bad. That means 20% are actually keeping up to our government's high standards. So that would be
one right and zero wrong.
Okay.
And the categories remaining are current events, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
Matthew.
Let's do science.
Science is always good, isn't it? Maybe not. Human and fly brains. Strikingly similar or no way? Human and fly brains.
We got a 50-50 chance on this one. let's go the holistic human, like, let's say we're the same. Let's do that.
Similar.
Okay.
Similar.
Similar. Eleanor, you think you go along with that?
Okay.
Okay. Okay. It's right. Oh, yeah. Hey. Strikingly similar.
Hey.
Yeah. It's all central complex and basal ganglia. The rest is just window dressing. Otherwise, they're identical. You could swap them out. You wouldn't know the difference.
That's two right and zero wrong.
Okay, wow. Very good.
And the categories left are current events, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
Okay. Eleanor?
Places,
okay. Could be anywhere. The most rejected name by the New Zealand Registrar of Births. They can reject your if you pick a name for a child, they can reject it if they don't like it. The most rejected name currently, is it Peace Up, Justice, or Aussie?
Oh.
This is New Zealand, of course.
Aussie or Aussie?
Aussie, like an Australian.
Well, like the hair product.
Like the hair product.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I think that's cause
we
enough
use it.
Right
no,
there.
It's very
yeah,
good.
I think that's cause enough. And I think there's some like xenophobic tension between the two.
It's
countries.
Like it's like a horse shampoo, isn't it?
Yeah.
The awesome.
You could call it that. I don't know if those women would appreciate that, Michael.
No, but a lot of people use horse shampoo. A lot of horses use it too, I imagine. But I know. So the most rejected name by the New Zealand Register of Births, is it Peace Up, Justice, or Aussie?
Eleanor?
Aussie?
Aussie, do you want to go with that?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's Justice. You cannot name your child Justice Schwartzberg. Because it sounds stupid,
okay.
I guess. But don't worry about it. Also, you can't name your child Christ, Duke, Lucifer, or CJ. I guess that's too Australian. Anyhow, that would be...
That's two right and one wrong.
Okay, don't worry about it. You're still on track here. What's left there?
Current events, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
All right.
Wait a minute.
Let's do current events.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Okay. The number of outfits Lindsay Lohan brings to her 90-day rehab stint.
Well, I know that she walked
90
out
days,
on that.
90 days. No, she's in it now. Did she bring 90, 180, or 270 outfits for the 90 days?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's not 90.
Yeah, you think it's the one higher than that, but not the 270 one?
Yeah, 270.
It's kind of
a
leading question, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's 270.
Okay.
Yeah.
You do? Why?
I have good on good authority.
Who's the good authority? I didn't see that one.
The fine people of the state of Wisconsin.
You're saying 200, so three outfits for every day of the 90 days.
That's what I would do.
207.
I'll go with you.
You wouldn't stay with this? This is a good look for you.
You need to get some variety.
Change it up. Okay, so you're saying 270, you go along with that, Eleanor? Or?
Yeah.
Yes, that's it. 270 outfits, three a day. Makes it a little easier in rehab, and congratulations, you've won the quiz.
Matthew, get ready to enjoy the flavors of ripe tomatoes, zesty jalapenos, bell peppers, and onions in a jar of hot salsa from Sanchez Specialties in Almond, Wisconsin, a cut above the rest. Eleanor, greet every morning with vim and vigor in a cup of Stephen Brew's breakfast blend, and later savor the richness of Costa Rican Terasu from Madison's Stephen Brew Coffee. That's coffee done right. And each of you can put the fun back into technical help in the fast-paced card game Tech Support from Kenzer & Company, and expand your mental horizons with the book What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Congratulations to you both.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Matthew, good job. Eleanor, thanks a lot. Hang on. We'll make sure you get that. Thanks for playing.
What Do You Know returns to Monona Terrace on June 7th, featuring an interview with comedian, author, and podcast host Mark Maron. For a full schedule of upcoming shows and ticket information, click over to notmuch.com. Coming up in the next hour of What Do You Know, we find out what a BIMP is during our Pleasant Town of the Week, plus a batch of your memos and another hilarious round of the What Do You Know quiz. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI, Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, Producer International. This is PRI, Public Radio International. Welcome back to an encore presentation of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, Lyle leaves the booth to talk about his Game of Thrones viral video. Plus, thanks for the memos and another round of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who should have bought that little chainsaw, it's Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's the theme song. I've heard all these years. Are there words to that? Do you ever, when you write a song, do you have like words in your head going through? Because what are the words to our theme song?
There are no words. I could write some words.
There are no words. I like that.
Yeah, no words.
That's a good song idea. There are no words.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But kinda not like that this. Other one we wrote together, Kissing the Lips of Love.
Kissing the Lips of Love, which never went anywhere, but it was a nice tune. It was kind of a samba, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or bossa nova or something.
Yeah.
But there's no words to this.
No.
Because it'd be hard. I was trying to imagine. You can't. It's hard to put words to that.
And there he comes.
There he goes. There he goes. What is this? What's now?
I'll work on it. I'll work on some lyrics.
Yeah, something like that. It'd have to be like short little sentences. Well, you know, each week at this time, we get actual memos sent in by actual listeners. Yes, we do. And other things they send in, too. For example, like this, the What Do You Know Rhyme by Ren Maypal. Yeah, a little poem. That's kind of cute. People travel miles to see a show, which is called What Do You Know? Cows and pink flamingos, too, know the answers, not much. You? It brings people together no matter the weather. The callers are witty from small town to big city. In Nevada to Flint, they always get a hint. Kielbasa, cheese, and beer are in the atmosphere. From the state that is dairy, bobbleheads are not scary. The guests are enlightening, but they're never frightening. But if you're not wishing to be an addition, just acquisition, the fetal position. So there you go. It covers about everything. That's my entire career in just so many words. Very good. Very good. With love from Ren Maypal. Thank you very much for that. What do you know, Ryan? And I had this for a long time. Not as long as it's been, but it's a classic memo. You can tell it's actually typed on now yellowing paper, but it's a good one. It's from a heating and plumbing company in Georgia. It's not really a memo, but it's a letter. People used to write letters to people. To someone in Illinois, actually, and reads as follows. Dear sir, your damn tank didn't need any air charging. You had leaks on copper spray line and also three leaks underground, which when repaired, the pump would build up to 60 pounds immediately and cut off. If busted copper spray line and underground leaks was not repaired, your well would have been pumped dry if pump was left on. I don't need you or anyone else to tell me how to charge a pump tank. I've been doing this for 35 years, and that would have been what we would have done if needed. It doesn't make a damn whether you pay for this or not. It's immaterial with me, and I don't need your damn money. This company is worth over $1 million and don't owe anyone a cent. Just remember in future to call someone else. Cordially, blank, Heating Company Incorporated. President. Well, there you got a letter for the president in no uncertain terms. It's a classic. So thank you for that letter and memos and other communications, Sarah.
Yes,
what
memos.
What can they do with them?
They can send them to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org if they like. Mm-hmm. Subject line memos. Mm-hmm. Or go to notmuch.com and post it there.
Oh, there. Okay. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. If they do still use the mail?
The snail mail? Yes. 821 University Avenue. Maybe I should read that a little slower. 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
Are you slowing down, kid?
Care of What Do You Know? Thanks for the memos.
Are you doing more of the public radio voice?
I can do. Shall I do
How
that?
Slow can you go?
So slow it would put you to sleep.
That's the idea. It's public radio. So thoughtful you could snooze. Well, you know, each week at this time, and most weeks not at all, we honor a town, village, or burg. That's right. It's time once again for Town of the Week. And here is Sarah Nix.
Smack in the heart of northeast Texas, Mount Pleasant is the seat of Titus County. The area was originally part of the terrain of the Cato Indian tribe. They built large burial mounds, and local lore goes that the Cato people spoke of a pleasant mound in the central part of what is now Titus County. European settlers in the 1830s named Mount Pleasant after it. The town was a stop on
They named it after what?
After the Pleasant Mound in the central part. Okay. Yes, yeah. Hence the name Pleasant, or Mount Pleasant. Okay. Yes. Okay. The town was a stop on the Clarksville to Jefferson Road, and by 1850, Mount Pleasant had a population of 227. It was primarily a farming community where cotton and corn were the main cash crops. Mm-hmm. In 1861, Titus County voted for secession and sent 1,500 men to fight in the Confederate Army. During the Civil War, blacksmiths, carpenters, harness makers, and wheelwrights built wagons to support the Confederacy.
Wagons.
After the war, the narrow gauge railroad moved in, and Mount Pleasant became a transportation hub. The population grew to 963 in 1890. The economy shifted toward logging, coal mining, and brickmaking in the early 20th century. Currently, the population stands at about 15,000. It's the birthplace of a fistful of NFL players. Including one whose name might be familiar to Packer fans. Former Green Bay running back Basil Mitchell is from Mount Pleasant. So is Krista Branch, the singer of the Tea Party anthem, I Am America.
Oh.
If you're in Mount Pleasant and looking for something fun to do, you can watch the Mount Pleasant High Tigers play or the Chapel Hill High School Red Devils. Before the game, there are a couple of locally owned barbecue places to check out. There are also more than 17,000 acres of parks and lakes for fishing, swimming, and water skiing. Oh. And that is our Town of the Week, Mount Pleasant, Texas.
Thank you, Sarah. Sounds like a little bit of paradise there.
Doesn't it?
In Texas.
Yep. Barbecue, yep. NFL players, can't go wrong.
You name it.
Yep.
And all those acres, that's amazing, those 17,000 acres, say something like that?
Yeah, I figured out that that's about an acre per resident, an acre plus per resident.
Yeah,
yeah,
because it's 15,000. Did you figure that out?
Yeah, I did.
Did you divide?
Well, I figured out it was like an acre plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good, very good. And we're calling now randomly. Lyle is. Hi, Lyle. He's calling randomly now. It may not be this town, but, you know, when he goes random, he goes random. He usually looks for a Feldman.
In Mount Pleasant.
Places that I've never seen one, you know, like Mount Pleasant, Texas. I doubt there's a Feldman. Did you find a Feldman out there yet? Did you try? Well, you did?
I see his mouth moving.
His
I
mouth
think
is
he
moving.
He may be talking on the phone. His mouth is moving a lot.
Oh, that's just a little quirk he's got there.
His hand's waving now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, isn't that cute? Yeah. He does that, though. He does. I don't know what it is. He's chewing something.
We have somebody from Texas in the audience.
Yeah.
I don't.
They're not from. You're not from Mount Pleasant, though, right? You're from Sulphur Springs.
Mount Pleasant's about 58 miles.
58? Oh, you're pretty close.
Oh.
Have you been to Mount Pleasant? Do you like it?
Oh, yeah.
She likes it.
That's good.
Okay. Oh, and we have someone now, Shannon Norfleet from Mount Pleasant. You can fill us in a little more than that, I guess. Hi, Shannon. How are you?
Hi. Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you. Did Lyle explain to you that we're this show called What Do You Know?
He did.
Yeah. Have you heard of it?
Have not.
No, that's okay. It's actually Michael Feldman's What Do You Know, and I'm him.
Okay. But,
and Mount Pleasant is our town of the week.
Now, how did we become town of the week?
Well, we threw a dart at a map.
Okay.
That's how we do it here, because it's strictly impartial that way, and it landed right on Mount Pleasant. So we were thinking maybe you could fill us in on Mount Pleasant. Did you happen to hear what Sarah said about it?
I did.
Yeah.
She said about the Indians, where they settled the place, an acre per person.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty true.
Yeah. Yes.
Go
ahead.
Mount Pleasant, do you just want me to tell you about it?
Oh, sure. Tell
you
me. Were you born there? Are you a native?
I was born not far from there. I'm actually married to they call them Bimps, born in Mount Pleasant. And after we got married, I moved there. So.
So you married a bimp.
I married a bimp.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And what does that entail? Is that a lot of responsibility if you marry a bimp?
It really does. It comes with a lot of responsibility to be a bimp.
Yeah.
You have to pretty much keep up an acre per person, like you said.
Yeah. So you're actually in charge of that acre plus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What have you done with yours?
With ours, we put a little lake in, and we have some fishing, and... That's what Mount Pleasant is pretty famous for, I'd say. It's located in northeast Texas. Mm-hmm. We're between Dallas and Texarkana, mm-hmm. and surrounded by lakes, and it's cattle country.
Mm-hmm.
With Mount Pleasant, our slogan, it says, Mount Pleasant, everything Texas. So whenever you think of something about Texas, it pretty much has it there. What do you think about Texas? What comes to your mind?
Well, I was thinking about Sulphur Springs, but that's just because they're here now from Sulphur Springs in our audience, some people. So.
We love Sulphur Springs.
Yeah.
Did they tell you about their bathrooms?
About their what?
About their bathrooms downtown.
Their bathrooms downtown? No, she didn't mention anything about a bathroom downtown. But what about it?
They have mirrored glass bathrooms.
No.
On their courthouse square, and you can sit in the bathroom and look out, but they can't see into you. That's Sulphur Springs, not Mount Pleasant.
Wait a minute. You can go to the bathroom on the courthouse square, right on the square, and you can see them, but they can't see you?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
I'm not going to one of those.
Is that true? She says that's true.
Well, that's... I wouldn't lie.
Well, would you like something like that on your acre in Mount Pleasant? A little
no.
Allegedly see-through bathroom would be kind of... What? I wonder what the thinking was behind that.
Tourist trap? I don't know. Something different.
What does Mount Pleasant have something similar or other tourist attractions besides like bathrooms on the square? You can.
Well, when we come to... things we have coming up at the end of the month, we have our Everything Texas Fest and Rodeo. That's exciting. That's very Mount Pleasant-ish.
Yeah. Texas, and what comes with that?
It has everything Texas. You think of cowboys and rodeos and Prefort Ranch and rodeo equipment. They're the largest manufacturer of that in the whole entire world.
Mm-hmm.
And they're housed out of Mount Pleasant. We have a big rodeo complex. And at this festival, pretty much anything she can think of that relates to Texas.
Are you
corn dogs?
And what?
Corn dogs.
Corn dogs, yeah. Think of that. And which of those things are you involved with yourself or your family? Are you in the rodeo end of things, or are you a fisherwoman? Or
I am kind of a fisherwoman. We are camping right now. We're at a bass tournament.
Oh, you are right now?
Uh-huh.
Oh,
yep.
No kidding.
Yep. East Texas is known for our lakes. It's got Lake of the Palms and Lake Bob Sandlin's running all there on there. So right now we're at a bass tournament.
Bass tournament. Is your husband out in the boat or what?
He is.
Yeah.
Yep.
The bimp? The bimp
money.
Is out in the boat?
Oh,
and
a glass toilet.
Yeah. Talking with you is a pleasure, I got to say, Shannon. It's a one in a million, but it's really a pleasure talking to you. And why aren't you out in the boat with the bimp, though?
I'm about to go. I just didn't wake up that early.
Oh. He got up early to go out in the bass.
Oh, yeah. They head out at about 4 a.m., that's not really my speed.
Has he done well in this tournament before? Or?
A couple of years ago, he placed in that place, and Big Bass of the Hour.
Yeah, the Big Bass of the Hour?
Uh-huh.
What do you get for that?
About $5,000.
No kidding.
Yeah, this is serious business. You can win a boat and...
Oh, man.
And a truck and... A trip to Disney World and all sorts of things.
Well, wow, that's absolutely amazing. So when is he, do you know how he's doing? Is there any way, do you communicate?
No, but we have another friend who's in second place, so.
No kidding.
Good. He runs third this afternoon.
Wow. What does the winner get of this bass thing?
What did you say?
Well, the winner of the bass fishing contest.
They get a boat and a truck and.
Oh, they get all that.
Big prizes.
They're set for life. They can retire after winning the bass tournament, huh?
Uh-huh.
We have them up here, but I don't think they give you anything very much. I think you get an Evinrude or something. About the best you can get. So, and then did you raise a family out there, Shannon?
I have one daughter. Yep. It's a great place to raise a family.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of things to do for the kids. Just, it's very country. It's whenever you said that about the acreage, it's a nice, safe place for your kids and raising a family there.
Yeah.
Lots of things to do with the outdoors.
Let me ask you this. If we were coming down there to Mount Pleasant, and now we have your name and we know where you live, the Norfleet. And then, so if we were coming there, where would you take us? There's places that maybe tourists wouldn't know about, but where local people go. Where would we go?
I would definitely take you out to the lakes. I just think that's some of the most beautiful country. Mm-hmm. I'd take you to eat at Pete's Barbecue. It's a local attraction. It's awesome barbecue, pizza, Texas style.
Yeah.
It's in a big barn.
Texas style pizza?
Uh-huh.
What is in Texas style pizza?
I don't know. It's deliciousness. Pure magic. I don't know. Barbecue.
Barbecue I sort of get, right?
Yeah. It's barbecue on the pizza.
Yeah. Okay. And then we're going out. It's nighttime. Night falls, and we want a little libation, maybe a little dancing, whatever. Where do we head? Where do we head?
Around Mount Pleasant at night. We have
just stay indoors.
Not like you would stick with that. No. I guess that we do. We have a cultural arts center at our local college. They bring things in all the time.
Yeah.
I'm
not thinking about culture so much here at this point. We're thinking about a little libation, a little local color.
You're thinking about a pasture party.
Yeah. A pasture party?
Yes. You have not lived.
Are you saying I'm past my party, or are you saying a party in the pasture?
A party in the pasture, yes, sir.
Okay, and how do you dress for that? I don't know. I've never been to one. How does that work? What do I wear? I mean, and what should I bring? What do I bring?
You just bring a cooler. And we'd build a fire, and everyone parked their trucks around in a big circle, and they'd let their tailgates down, so that's your seating.
Uh-huh. Sit on the tailgates.
Uh-huh.
And then whatever happens.
That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just friends and fun.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. I'd love to do that. I have to get a cooler with wheels on it or something, all right? One of those you pull.
Oh, no,
Shannon. Well, you know, I hope we talk again sometime. I think we should just talk to each other regardless of this show or what is it, you know, it isn't.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Off air, I can tell you more.
Yeah. Oh, good. I want a party pasture with you, or a pasture in the party with you. And of course the family, and of course the bimp as well. They can all be there, but
oh yeah,
I'm not talking.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's all in the up and up. Shannon, thank you so much for speaking with us. We have a little something for you, just for being so nice.
Shannon, we'll be sending you the pride of America's Dairyland in a scrumptious selection of 10 premium certified organic cheeses and butters from Lafarge, Wisconsin's Organic Valley family of farms.
There you go. Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you.
We'll have to get an address from you and all that, so just stay on the line for a second. But thanks so much. Shannon Norfleet for Town of the Week, Mount Pleasant, Texas. She's so good-humored. I've really been drinking quite a bit, I think. One of the two. Or both. But she's great. And so we can actually pick a town of the week now.
We can. Well, if, somebody can.
Yeah, someone would care to throw this dart here. I don't have my...
Somebody's very eager right there in the front row.
Hi, hi, dear. How are you doing? Okay, have you thrown a dart before?
This will be my first time.
Oh, good. Let's
mind if I, back.
Can I spin you around a couple times? No. This is our rearranged map of the U.S., and you just go ahead.
Go
do your worst.
All right.
I think look. I hit the ocean.
You did, but it's really close to Morgan City, Louisiana. So we'll take that. Congratulations. Thank you so much for being here. Morgan City, our town of the week. For next week, or next month.
Or next year.
Fabulous. All right. Got that?
Got it.
Okay, because you got to research that, right?
Yeah, I do. I got it. I got to look it up.
All right, gentlemen.
Do another little tune here?
You feel like doing another little tune here?
This is called No Words for Swing.
No Words for Swing. John Tulin on the piano. Jeff Hammond on the bass.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
We got to get past the Disney on Ice. How's everybody? Pretty good? Yeah? Got a big weekend plan? Big weekend plan? Got plans tonight? What are you?
Greek Easter this weekend.
It's Greek Easter?
Yeah.
So what do you do for that?
We're going to church for a few hours.
Yeah? That's it? Is there a party or something?
Dinner at 2 in the morning.
Dinner at 2 in the morning?
I guess so.
Is that a tradition, a Greek tradition, to have dinner at 2 in the morning?
Well, after service.
Oh, because the service goes all night.
Yeah.
And then typically what would you have in the dinner?
Lamb.
Lamb. Okay. Anything on the side?
Greek salad.
Greek
salad. Okay.
I was wondering, do Greeks actually eat a Greek salad, or is that just something that was foisted upon them by restaurateurs?
Yeah, they really do.
Yeah. Okay. And what else is there? What's a good Greek, baklava or something?
Something like that. They might not do that, though, because of all the people. Maybe they'll make some coffee and ice cream or something.
Is there too many people coming to it?
I think so.
That'd be a lot of baklava, huh?
That's a lot of work.
Yeah. Do you make your own baklava?
Mine does. Yeah. Once in a while. Rarely.
Yeah. Can you get me just briefly? I know there's a lot of layers to it, but how do you do that?
Butter, nuts, and you bake it, and then you throw syrup on it.
Sounds so easy when you say it that way, but it probably takes you about 7 or 8 hours to get
it. Kilo, it dries up, and it breaks when you're trying to lay it out.
I hate it when your phyllo gets dry and breaks. You know, I've had that problem for years. I'm not even Greek. Do love that food, though. Okay, well, very good. Can you tell Bob Sparks something he doesn't already know? I don't think so. Because I don't know who Bob Sparks is. I don't know what he knows. Where is Joe Mama? Joe Mama says here. Well, where's Bob Sparks? Who's Joe Mama? Well, that's Bob Sparks. Can I get you to stand up, Bob Sparks? And let's see what do you know and what don't you know?
I really don't run into that problem because if there's something I might not know, I just ask my wife, and she's very good with Google.
You're a very wise man, Bob Sparks. You're wise beyond your years, even, which is a pretty good trick at this point, you know.
Oh, yeah, I'm 78.
Yeah. Bob Sparks has taken over my show here, ladies and gentlemen, just on the sheer basis of personality and so forth. And where's Joe Mama? Is that, am I reading that right?
Yeah.
Okay, let me just, excuse me, I'm just going to lean over here. Yeah. Joe Mama is not your legal name, is it?
That's what the kids have always called me. And the grandkids.
Yeah. Do you mean kids on the street are shouting that at you, or you mean Joe Mama? Or are they, are kids in the family call you that?
My son sort of started that, I think, and with his friends, and my daughter's with her friends. But then when I took up the cello, instead of Yo-Yo Ma, they called me Joe Mama.
All right, now it makes perfect sense. And then how did Bob Sparks enter this equation?
Well, we have the last same name.
Okay, that's as far as it goes? Yeah.
Well, we've been married for 56 years.
Well, they say the first 56 are the hardest. Do you find that to be true?
I don't know about the years afterwards, so I get it.
Where did you meet?
University of Wisconsin.
You did? You did.
Yes. 57, 58. And then when we left the universities, we did our careers in Indiana and Texas and around. And came back to Wisconsin, Madison, to retire. Been here about. Yes, yes. Yes, and these are these are my guests.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so the Sulphur Springs crowd.
That's my cousin, and this is my sister from College Station.
Wow, isn't that nice?
Yes. It's a nice little group here we got here going, and it's all this Sparks connection and. You can't tell him anything? Now, did you mean to imply that you cannot tell Bob Sparks anything? Because he seems to say that.
Well, he's a very good resource, but, you know, he just seems to know everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he said that.
Well, I asked him when we got the card, put down a question to ask Michael, and he says, you know, he can't tell me anything. You know, I know everything. So I said, I'll write something, and that's what I wrote.
Let's go back to Bob Sparks then. Excuse me just a second. I don't mean to lean over you. Bob, stand up here, Bob. Take your medicine like a man. But you're a pretty knowledgeable guy. What field are you in?
I majored in engineering physics. No, that's very limiting. I know practically nothing. Semiconductors.
Semiconductors?
But there's a lot more to life than semiconductors and trusses.
There is, and I'm glad I could retire and do some other things.
So now, what do you do in retirement? That you expanded your horizons?
Well, we go to the Overture Center for symphonies, plays. We walk. We used to play bridge until it got too difficult for me.
Too difficult?
Too difficult.
Too difficult?
Yes.
Well, I'm enjoying this, but I got to do other things. Sparks and the family and JoJo Mama, Joe Mama, and there are friends from Sulphur Springs in the room. What a group. Good group. Thank you all for coming. Chris Kirkpatrick from Iowa City, Iowa, says, how do you feel about wives not taking their husband's last name? Well, I've had two. One of them took it. One of them didn't. But, on the other hand, the one who took it gave it back. So, either way, it's a wash. I don't think, you know, I don't blame them if they don't, because if you can give it back, then who wants it? I do admire the couples who kind of join their name, hyphenate their names and stuff, you know, but some of them get pretty ridiculous. You know, if you've been married a couple times, it gets really long, you know. So, it's more like a train of names, you know, than. But where is Chris? Kirkpatrick from Iowa City. They left. They had to go because their spouse wanted them to go. Okay. Terry Bartnick, Abbotsford up north. Abbotsford is near you, isn't it? Well, you're in Colby? Is your mic ever work? Try talking into it once.
No, I'm from Abbotsford, but now my mother lives in Dorchester.
You're from Abbotsford, though.
Okay.
Where are the Bartniks? Is that right, Bartnik? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me come to you because I don't want to put you out or anything. Do you know the Andersons? You know the Andersons up there in Abbotsford?
I do not know Andersons, but I heard Kramer's on your program one day. That's how I knew Lyle was from Abbotsford.
Oh, you never run into the Andersons?
What's his mother's name?
What's your mother's name?
Dorothy. They live in Dorchester.
Oh, she was married to Gordon Anderson?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Yes.
How did you not know him? And then Lyle, was just Lyle, the boy.
I guess I never met Lyle the boy. I just met his
mom. Well, there he is right there. He's there behind that glass there. We'll keep him there in that little room there, but because you got to, you know, you have to be safe that way.
Okay.
And so how are things up there? Are you farming up there?
No, I'm a milk hauler.
You're a milk hauler.
I go to the farms and pick up the milk and take them to the factory where they make it into cheese. So we got to drive through all that snow on Thursday.
Yeah, how was that?
That was not very much fun. And the ski trails, the cross-country ski trails are actually open up north.
Yeah.
You talked about the snowmobile trails?
Yeah.
The cross-country ski trails are open.
It's great, isn't it? Don't you love it?
Well, I do like winter, so I don't mind.
You don't mind too much. Except you got to haul that stuff through all that. Okay, you're almost like those truckers, and those Alaska truckers hauling the pipe up north.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Almost, yes.
The milk must go through, right?
That's absolutely right.
You have to use your own vehicle to haul that milk?
Yes, we have five trucks. Yes.
Drive all five? Would you have a convoy?
I'm not at one time.
Well, very nice. Is the whole family here? Are these all Bartniks?
Well, just my youngest son. He bought me these tickets for my birthday.
Did you want them, or did he just... Yes. They were cheap, right? They were in his price range?
That's right, yes. He didn't even make me pay for them. He's in college, so usually...
He's a good kid.
He's a wonderful
and
son.
And where is he going to school?
Stevens Point.
Stevens Point. What are you taking? What are you studying? Studying. It's called what you take in college, what he's studying. Dietetics?
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
He's only in that field because he's the only man in that field. The rest of them are all women.
That's a good field to be in, then. Very nice to meet you, and hello to all the family.
Here. Thank you. You too. Thanks. Yeah.
Thanks for coming. How are you?
Good.
Huh? Did you feel like, did you want to say hello?
Hi.
Yeah. What's your name?
Addie.
Addie. That's one of my favorite names. Yours too? Oh, you're telling her to say that. Okay. It's hers too, her favorite name too. What grade are you in right now, Addie?
Second.
Second grade? Is it harder than first was?
Yeah.
Yeah? What is hard in second grade?
Pretty much math. Yeah. It's just we're using lots of units of measurement, and it's just kind of hard.
Yeah. Is there one unit of measurement that's harder than another?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Bushels I never got, and pecs. Bushels and pecs and things, because it doesn't make any sense. Did you have a subject you really like?
Yeah.
What do you like?
Reading.
Oh, yeah. What are you reading right now?
Well, we do have these, like, guided reading groups, and I really can't remember what we're reading.
Oh, yeah. But it's good, huh?
Yeah.
Do you read on your own, too? Like?
Yeah.
A favorite book or series of books or anything that you read on your own?
I am reading a series of books, mm-hmm. The Rise of the Guardian books.
Yeah. And what's that about?
It's about how there is this nightmare king, and his name is Pitch, and he's like all bad, and he turns children's good dreams into nightmares.
Whoa. Does your mother know you're reading that? That sounds like a very interesting book.
Yeah.
Are they kind of scary?
The first one was kind of.
Yeah. But then you want to read the second one and see what happens, right?
I don't have the second one. I only have the first and third.
Oh. Got to get the second one, because how do you make, you know, something might have happened in between there.
I know.
I think your mom is nodding too. You probably get that. Well, nice, very nice talking with you, Addie. It's a pleasure. Interesting book. I got luck with those. Where's my brother? I say hello to my brother. Don't I? My brother Arthur. He's a physician. He's a wealthy California physician from San Jose. Stand up a minute, Arthur. You can stand up, can't you?
Not really.
What is your...
Yes.
What is your belt size these days?
Oh, we were talking about that. It's let's say it's between 34 and 39.
Now, Arthur is a physician, all right? All right. But here's the thing about weight. And what is your thing about weight exactly? What you don't weigh yourself.
That is true. I didn't know this was going to be repeated, but
it's fascinating. I think about you and I think about not weighing yourself.
Yes. What's the point, you know?
Shouldn't one weigh oneself?
Well, the health benefits of losing fat is best measured by a belt size, because the high risk weight goes to the midsection in men, particularly. So outcomes of illness, predicted future illness, correlates better with your belt size than it does with your actual weight.
Is this based on actual research or your own predisposition?
No. It has nothing to do with my predisposition. I'm the opposite predisposition.
Sure. What would that be?
That would be to not worry about the belt size.
And this works, but does it help in terms of losing?
Actual patients, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it...
You tell them not to weigh themselves just to change their belt every so often?
No, they're all going to... They're not going to listen anyways, one way or another, but... if they do lose belt size, then you know I tell them that they've done a real good thing for their overall health.
Yeah, but what about a guy like me who wears these braided belts, where you can stick it anywhere you want, and you don't even know it's somewhere between I'm like you, between a 32 and a 40, basically.
Well, you could just use colored belts or something like that. You could do a blue, a red, and a green, you know.
Oh, like karate or something.
Yeah, something like that would be good.
Thanks.
All right, very good.
From a wealthy California physician, Arthur Feldman, some medical advice. This is why I never went into medicine, because our family was not designed for it. We're not built for it. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz, because, frankly, we got to. We're a quiz show. It's required by law, and we do that. Now, I noticed some of you were sitting here watching the first one and giving actually suggestions to Matthew as he was up there. Perhaps one of those people would like to try it themselves, put themselves on the line. Probably a little. Do you think you could do it, Addie? I mean, you're kind of young. I don't know. You're pretty good in school, though, right? Yeah? Reading at a fifth grade level, that's good enough for the What Do You Know quiz. Come on, Addie. You feel good about this? Fifth grade level is a national average. So that's... This is very good. And then you work with someone out there, who will call up and play along with you, and you'll have a support staff and some of the greatest minds of my generation. Like me, I can't put on my headphones. Let's see, RL. That's all you got to know. And you met my brother with his belt theory of weight. That's my brother. Do you have brothers or sisters or anything?
Actually, one of each.
You do? Are you in the middle?
Actually, I'm the youngest sibling.
Mm-hmm. Youngest sibling. So you have two older siblings?
Yeah.
And what are their names?
Jessa.
Hmm.
And
the other one.
Philip.
Very nice. You get along with him? Pretty good?
Yeah, I really don't. I haven't seen my brother because he just got out of the army.
Oh.
So, he even left before I was 5. So
oh, sure, yeah.
It was kind of hard, but.
Yeah.
Well, I got through it.
So yeah, you got through it. And he's a lot older than you. And then the Jessa, is that what you said?
Yeah.
And what age is she?
27, I think.
Really? Okay, so you
had her second child over a month ago.
Okay. And so your folks took a little time off, probably, after the first two, and then the miracle of Addie. Yeah. Right, you don't want to call yourself a miracle. That's for someone else to do. I know. I'm a miracle. You know. Well, not so much anymore. You know, it's a miracle I'm still around, really. But okay, Eddie, you know how the quiz works? Someone out there calls in and plays along with you, and then they have various categories.
Yeah.
You know how it goes? Okay, good. You probably have you heard the show a lot, or?
This is actually my first time.
Oh.
Listening and watching the show.
Mm-hmm. What do you think so far?
It's good. I was like, I'm not going.
And yet here you are. But you're glad you came now, right? Because you're on the air and you get a lot of fans out there. You get notoriety when you go back. Where's your home?
Actually in Eau Claire. So we got like some snow. And actually, I think Black River Falls got like 16 or 17 inches of snow.
I saw that. You didn't get quite that much, though, huh? But maybe a foot or so?
Probably.
Yeah. Do you like the fact that it snowed in May? Was that too weird?
It's a little weird of weather, and I'm thinking, I'm in Colorado.
Yeah. You're thinking that. I must be in Colorado, but you're in Eau Claire or Black River Falls. Yeah. Okay. All right, someone out there, we have, how do we do that again, Sarah?
People who want to play the quiz, pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669.
Okay.
And
is there an easier way to remember that?
Yeah, there is. 1-800-WA-NO or 1-800-WHACK-NOW. WHACK-NOW. WHACK.
No one has ever said the H before. Thank you so much for doing that.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And then
and then you ask them a question.
Oh, I ask them this question.
Which they have to get right in order to play the rest
of
the
quiz. Okay, we want here the estimated number of ladybugs in the Mall of America.
Zero?
you don't have to answer. Someone out there does. No, I'll tell you, actually, there's a lot of them. You'd be surprised. The Mall of America has a lot of plants and vegetation. Mall of America, you know, the Mall of America. Have you been to the Mall of America in Minnesota? You must, yeah, not too far from you. And so what they brought, they had pests. They had aphids. You know your aphids. So you bring in aphids, and you got to bring in your ladybugs. Then you got to bring in, like, large birds to get the ladybugs. And it gets out of hand. Then you need foxes to get the birds. And it's really getting crazy out there. I wouldn't go to the Mall of America anymore. It's a jungle out there. But I want to know the estimated number of ladybugs in the Mall of America to the nearest 1,000, would you think?
That sounds right.
Yeah, because there are thousands. You need a lot of them because a lot of aphids. Okay. Steve's on the line from Columbus, Ohio. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Have you been having the weird weather in Columbus, like here?
No, it's been terrific here the last week or so.
Yeah? Warm?
Yep.
Oh, yeah, it's too bad.
Yeah, warm, sunny, and all good.
Makes me feel even worse. Ohio gets good weather. Wisconsin gets stuck with it. It's been very strange.
Sorry. Anyway.
Yeah. What do you do these days, Steve?
Actually, I'm a chef.
Oh, you are? Are you working now?
No, I'm off today.
You're off today. What kind of chef are you?
I work in a grocery store. We have anything from meatloaf to citrus poached salmon.
Yeah? Were you trained as a chef? Did you go to chef school?
No, just practical experience throughout my life.
Just the school of hard cooking knocks?
That's the one.
Steve, how many ladybugs, the nearest 1,000 you think there are in the Mall of America that they imported there to get rid of their aphids?
I'm going to just take a guess at 20,000.
Don't you think it'd be more than that? It's the Mall of America. It's pretty big.
Well, I was thinking like 57,000.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I think you're getting somewhere on this question.
More like 120,000.
No, I wouldn't say there's that many, though, you know, because one ladybug could probably eat 1,000 aphids, don't you think?
Oh, probably around 80,000.
All right. Let's say that then, Steve.
I like it.
Okay. That's why I've never won any Peabody Awards, ladies and gentlemen. This type of radio doesn't win awards. But Steve, I thought you deserved to be on the air. Addie, this is Steve on the other end there. He's in Columbus, Ohio. And he's a chef.
Hi, Addie.
Hi.
Hi.
You want to say hi again?
Hi.
All right, already. She said hi. Leave her alone. So the two of you work together. You're a team. We have various questions, as you'll see. And what are those categories, Sarah Nix?
They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school. Had you been paying attention, science and odds and ends.
Okay. Steve, you pick the first one. What would you like?
How about science?
Science. Science question. You ready?
Gotcha.
You got science, right, Addie?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Is there an iTunes region in the brain? Is there an iTunes region in the brain? A region in the brain where iTunes comes from? I don't know. I don't know what this is. Purchases in iTunes or that registers with iTunes in the brain?
I'm very low tech, Addie. Help me out.
Talk it over.
Probably yes and no, like song stuck in your head or no.
Okay. Yes and no kind of covers all possibilities. Do you want to narrow it down to one of those? Or yes or no? Or yes? I mean, the region of your brain Yes? Steve?
I like your logic.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go with yes. What do you think?
Okay, Eddie?
Yeah.
Yes, there is. It's the nucleus.
Right.
Appleus.
Good job.
Appleumnus in the brain. Okay, I have no idea where that came from, but we'll take it anyhow, and that's
one right and zero wrong. And the categories remaining are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school.
Slower. Public radio.
The categories remaining are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, or odds and ends.
Yeah. A little too much emotion, though, I thought.
Okay, well, next time.
Emotionless and slow. That's the way we like it here.
Wooden.
Oh, wooden. I'm sorry. Addie, what, you like one of those categories? You want to hear me again?
Yeah.
Wooden, right?
No.
Okay.
Be yourself.
Categories remaining are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, or odds and ends.
Probably odds and ends, maybe, Steve?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. Odds and ends, maybe, Steve. According to a Burger King survey, men who prefer grilled burgers are one of the following. Are they all better looking? Are they better dancers? Or do they need two hands to hold their whoppers? Sorry, Eddie.
You eat burgers from Burger King?
Sorry about that.
What?
No. Do you like Burger King?
I haven't been there in a long time, yeah. So I really don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, these are men who prefer the grilled burgers they have at Burger King. Are they better looking, better dancers, or are they, you know, the other one? What do you think? This is a Burger King survey, so, you know.
I like the grill, so I'm going to say, I'm thinking better looking. What do you think?
Better looking.
I think so, too.
Yes, better looking, is it? They're, according to Burger King, if you like their burgers, you're better looking. So that works out.
That's two right and zero wrong.
We're getting somewhere
good,
now,
yeah,
huh?
Good yeah. progress, yeah.
Okay, what,
yeah.
what do you got left there?
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school.
Steve?
How about current events?
Current events. Mm-hmm. So, Steve, do you cook for yourself at home or just, you know, by the time you get home and figure, forget it?
I cook very little at home.
Do you, yeah?
Yeah.
I kind of
kind of fried, you know, by the end of the day. No pun intended.
No pun intended. None received.
Okay.
Popular new cosmetic surgery looks to obtain whose arms? What kind of... I'm sorry. I'm sorry again, Annie. I keep apologizing to you. There's a new kind of cosmetic surgery that people are asking for, and it's an arm type of arm surgery to have arms like a well-known individual. And I want to know who that individual is that this new burgeoning...
Male or female?
Female person, age. And they want arms like someone. So that's a new surgery. So we got to figure
Michelle
out who
Michelle Obama?
Whoa!
I don't know what cosmetic surgery is, so I'm gonna have Steve make the answer.
Okay, and he's right. Michelle Obama. They all want arms like Michelle Obama. Nobody wants arms like Molly Goldberg anymore. I don't know why. Well, that's unbelievable. They have in fact won
the quiz.
Well, should they stop and just forget about
well,
it?
Well, I mean that's a choice that they need to make as a duo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, will give us some idea why.
Well, I mean, they could stop and have won and get some great prizes, or they could put it all on the line and go for the mother load.
The mother load.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many more prizes.
Many, many more prizes, yep.
Yes.
Of high quality.
Addie, you want to go for it, bud?
Yeah.
They're going to go for it. Okay.
Let's do it.
Steve and Addie. Got to get, what, two right?
Yeah, two right.
Two right.
The motherload.
Two right.
Yeah.
What? Three right.
They have three right.
They have three right.
Don't fight with us. You know what we're doing. I got the numbers right here.
How dare you listen to my show and
correct me. We have no idea what we're doing.
Huh? They got to get two right.
Yeah.
Or is it one right?
Well, you change your mind. You change your mind on that often.
So. Well, it depends. We have plenty of time. So.
We do have plenty of time. So let's do two.
Two.
Yeah. Great.
Let's play
right,
two.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So then what's left then?
People, places, things you should have learned in school.
Okay.
Annie? Places?
Places. Okay. Could be anywhere. Let's see if it is. Yes, it is. acts of kindness in Singapore. Might want to let Steve handle this one, too.
Yeah, I'm going to have you handle it, Steve.
Have you been to Singapore? Maybe you've been to Singapore.
No.
No? Steve, Addie, neither? No? Okay. Well, anyhow, acts of kindness in Singapore, and apparently they keep track of these things in Singapore. Are they down, up, or are they pretty much flat? Acts of kindness. In this year.
Well, I know they're up here in the United States.
Acts of kindness.
What do you think, Addie?
Acts of kindness. They measure them in Singapore for some reason. Kindness, acts of kindness are reported.
Do you have a clue, Eddie?
Look at me like that. I'm trying my best here.
Okay, that's weird because why would acts of kindness be measured?
I know. You can't really, but in Singapore they are very concerned about that there be acts of kindness. Because then the more people will come to Singapore and they can be kind to them. I have no idea.
Addie, yeah. I think it has to be up.
Or down or flat.
Oh.
There's a kindness movement in Singapore, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I think it's up too.
You think it's up too? Do you think it could possibly maybe not be as kind as they were last year?
No.
Slight downturn in kindness?
I probably...
Well, and you just said no, so maybe we should... You just said no, so maybe we should go with no.
Last year was a very kind year in Singapore. It was probably one of the kinder years they've had. A lot of acts of kindness. So you can't always maintain that.
Down?
Down is right. Yes, they're down a little bit. A little bit. 83% to 62%. It was a big plunge, actually. We don't know what happened there.
The hotline broke down, I think.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, so that would be 4 right and 0 wrong.
Okay.
And the remaining categories are people
this
or...
This is it, then.
This is it, yes.
For everything.
Yes. Yeah. So choose wisely between people or things you should have learned in school.
Steve?
People?
Or
maybe?
Addie?
I'm not sure. People?
People or Steve? Or both of you?
People
okay?
People's good.
People's good, okay. Best job? Probably seen the list. Best job?
I'm going to have Steve do this one. I don't know that one.
Okay, all right. Well, maybe let's see what you think. The best job. The best job. Best job. Quiz show host. Okay.
Quiz show master.
Okay. Physician, San Jose, I think it'd be. If you're Arthur. The best job is one of the following. Life coach, actuary, or no job at all? The best job is?
No job at all?
That's a joke. I sometimes put a joke thing in there. Yeah. The best job is no job at all? You know, sort of a joke.
Very funny.
You're leaving me hang here, Eddie. We'll cross it out. Life coach or actuary? Best job on the job list.
Maybe life coach, Eddie.
Yeah, let's go with life coach.
Life coach, or did you hear the actuary? The actuary is a guy who does financial analysis of people's various situations and. Say it's a pretty good job.
It sounds kind of boring to me, but it sounds profitable, so maybe I... What do you think, Eddie?
Get to be an actuary, write your own ticket.
Oh, God.
Whereas the life coach, you're always looking for work.
Say that again.
What?
Say that again.
Me?
No, Steve.
Oh, Steve, I'm sorry. Say that again.
I said possible actuary.
Oh, actuary. Like a glorified accountant.
Yeah, right. Let's go with actuary.
Actuary is right. Yes, the best job you can have. So think about it, kid. Holy cow. They won it all.
That's changed my career.
Holy cow, you won
everything.
Addie, learn and have fun at the same time with the Flashmaster handheld computer that makes math flashcards obsolete from Flashmaster. Then break out the jams listening to Bourbon, Spearmint, and Ice, a CD from the Louisville Honky Tonk Band of Johnny Berry and the Outliers. Proclaim yourself a part-time model with a red t-shirt from Ray Gunn of Des Moines. Discover arcane secrets of golf. This will come in really handy for you with Bobby Rusher's When to Regrip Your Ball Retriever from R. Paul Rusher and Company. And load up on lots of waltzes, mazurkas, etude, and nocturne on What Do You Know About Chopin with liner notes by Michael Feldman on Nimbus Records.
This is the cornucopia?
This is the cornucopia.
Oh, boy.
I can add something else in.
Put some more corn in the corn.
And you can also make sonic mayhem wherever you go with a mini toot wood whistle.
Oh, Steve. Who gets that?
Addie does. Okay.
Anything
Steve.
That you'd like? We can get?
A pair of What Do You Know cow print sunglasses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, good, okay. There you go, the whole kit and caboodle. Steve, find out how often a Frenchman weighs himself, along with other valuable information, in What Do You Know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books.
Can we give Addie one of those, too?
Yeah, sure. Then celebrate cows, chickens, and other Wisconsin icons with a colorful art print from MarciaSparks.com. Watch a movie in the palm of your hand with a flip book from Thumb Cinema, and play What Do You Know the Party Game, including contestants, questions, and audience, along with a classic Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing.
She needs that, too.
Yeah, she can have that, too. Yeah. Available exclusively at NotMarch.com. Congratulations to you both.
All right.
Thank you.
Nice work, Addie.
Thank you.
We'll get all set. Steve,
thank
hang
you,
on.
Eddie.
Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman is our producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer, with assistance from Chris Myshock, Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, Kelly Osborne, and Diana Cook. Our technical director is Tom Blaine, with help from Brad Kohlberg and Aubrey Ralph. Very special thanks to our guest, Jess Walter. I'm Sarah Nix, hoping you'll join us next week for more of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know.
PRI, Public Radio International.